Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas
Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas
Tadikshaya ivashu gatayutta shrama
Tadikshaya ivashu gatayutta shrama
Nivritta sarvendriya vitti vibramas
Nivritta sarvendriya vitti vibramas
Tushtava janyam visajam janardhanam
Tushtava janyam visajam janardhanam Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas Tadikshaya vasugata yudashrama
Tadikshaya vasugata yudashrama
Nivritta sarvendriya vritti vipramas
Nivritti sarvendriya vritti vipramas
Tushtava janya Vishvijanjanardana
Tushtava janya Vishvijanjanardana Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas
Vishuddhaya dharanaya tashubhas
Tadikshaya vasugata yudashrama
Tadikshaya vasugata yudashrama
Nivritta sarvendriya vritti vibramas
Nivritta sarvendriya vritti vibramas Tushtava janyam visajam janardhanam
Vishuddhaya dharanaya
hatashubhas
Tadikshaya
vasu gata yudashrama
Nivritti sarvendriya vritti vibramas
Nivritta sarvendriya vritti vibramas
Tushtava janyam
visajam janardhanam Vishuddhaya
By purified
Dharanaya
Meditation
Ata-ashubha
Ata-ashubha
One who has minimized the inauspicious qualities of material existence
Tat him.
Ikshaya
by looking on.
Eva simply.
Ashu immediately.
Gata having gone away.
Yudha
from the arrows.
Shrama fatigue.
Nivritta being stopped.
Sarva all.
Indriya senses.
Vritti activities.
Pibrahma being widely engaged.
Tushtava
he prayed. Janyam
the material tabernacle.
Vishrijan
while quitting
Janardhanam to the controller of the living beings. Translation of the verse. By pure devotion, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material inauspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the error wounds. Thus, all the external activities of his senses at once stopped. And he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. Please repeat. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material auspiciousness. And was relieved of all bodily pains.
Caused by the arrow wounds.
Thus all the external activities of his senses at once stopped. And he prayed transcendentally.
and in prayer transcendental
to the controller of all living beings, while quitting his material body. The following purport was written by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The material body is a gift of the material energy, technically called illusion. Identification with the material body is due to forgetfulness of our eternal relationship with the Lord. For a pure devotee of the Lord, like Bhishma Deva, this illusion was at once removed as soon as the Lord arrived. Lord Krishna is like the sun, and the illusory external material energy is like darkness. In the presence of the sun, there is no possibility that darkness can stand. Therefore, just on the arrival of Lord Krishna, all material contamination was completely removed. And Bhishma Deva was thus able to be transcendentally situated by stopping the activities of the impure senses in collaboration with matter. The soul is originally pure, and so also the senses. By material contamination, the senses assume the role of imperfection and impurity. By revival of contact with the Supreme Pure, Lord Krishna, the senses again become freed from material contaminations. Bhishma Deva attained all these transcendental conditions prior to his leaving the material body because of the Lord's presence. The Lord is a controller and benefactor of all living beings. That is the verdict of all Vedas. Is the Supreme Eternity a living entity amongst all eternal living beings? Nitya nityanam cetanas cetananam eko bahunam yavida dati kaman, from the Katopanishad. And he alone provides all the necessities for all kinds of living beings. Thus he provided all facilities to fulfill the transcendental desires of his great devotee Bhishma Deva, who prayed as follows: Vishuddhaya dharanaya ata shubhas tadikshayai vashu gata yudhakshrama nivritta sarvendriya vritti vibramas tushtava janyam vishtajan janardhanam. By pure meditation, looking at Lord Sri Krishna, he at once was freed from all material inauspiciousness and was relieved of all bodily pains caused by the arrow wounds. Thus all the external activities of his senses at once stopped, and he prayed transcendentally to the controller of all living beings while quitting his material body. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militan Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitantam Saji Jivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Navostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Panchakalpatarugyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It's a very glorious passing away of Bhishmadeva here. I think we have told the story of Bhishmadeva some weeks ago, the last class I gave. And I don't remember exactly if I told the story how he became all pierced all over his body. I think I did. You remember? If I told the story how Bhishmadeva had lost the desire to live in this world. He was a pure devotee, so he never agreed with Duryodhana's foul means to keep his kingdom. Actually, he had no right to the kingdom. He had some right, because you all should know, or should know, that Duryodhana's father was Dhritarashtra, was the firstborn. So in theory, he was the king. When his father, Pando, would have gave out his body. But since he was blind, he could not rule. So the second born, which was Pando, became the king. And he ruled very well. He was a great king. But he couldn't rule for a long time because he got a curse. And by this curse, he was unable to rule. So now, since Dhritarashtra was blind and Pando was unable to rule, who was the heir by right? According to the Vedas, the first one who would have born from Dhritarashtra's children and Pando's children, and then he would rule. So who took birth first was Yudhishthira. So Yudhishthira had the right to the throne. Not that to Duryodhana had not any right, but Yudhishthira was the rightful heir to the throne of the Kurava dynasty. But Duryodhana never accepted that, and he tried anything he could first to harm when they were very young, and then to kill when they grew up his cousins. In any way, there is a lot of stories, maybe tell more stories from the Mahabharata the next days. And so Duryodhana and Bhishmadeva was watching all this, and he never agreed because he was virtuous. A virtuous person can never accept. I need at least one to look at me less I can speak. A virtuous person, when someone is a good person, can stand bad things happening.
You said virtuous?
Yeah. He was very virtuous, very nice. He was a good man. So actually he was a pure devotee. But in society he was appearing like a very virtuous person. So he couldn't accept Duryodhana's plans. But he had to accept them. Why? Why he had to accept them? Well, because he was living in Hastinapur, and until the situation wasn't clear, he was under the protection and payment of the king. And at that point, the king was Duryodhana. So he had to accept by dharma, means duty. He had the duty to act in that way. There are different levels of dharmas. Of course, the word dharma refers to the transcendental nature of the soul. By the root of the word dharma is dri. Dri means to sustain. So what is the dharma? Just to understand what was the meaning of the dharma. What's the dharma of the fire? What it sustains the existence of a particular object, that is the dharma. So what is the quality that sustains the fire? Is the heat. And what is the dharma, and what is the essential nature, the most important nature of the water, is liquidity. So what is the dharma of the soul? That's prema bhakti. Okay, but when the soul comes in the material world, it takes a secondary nature, and he has to respect that secondary nature, because by working according to this secondary nature, he can elevate himself. That also is called dharma, although it's not directly the dharma of the soul. Still is the dharma, because it brings someone to the original and transcendental dharma. So the soul, Bhishma Deva, born as a kshatriya, so he had to respect the kshatriya's dharma. Because if Duryodhana, if Bhishma Deva would have said to Duryodhana, okay, you're a rascal, then I don't stay here anymore, then all the kshatriya would have felt free to do anything they wanted. So they take money from the king, as long as they like it, and we don't like it anymore, they go away. So this is not dharmic, this is not good. So great persons has to give not only good teachings, but they had to give also good examples. And Bhishma Deva had to give is to give a good example also by accepting a demonic king like Duryodhana. So he accepted everything, although from time to time he was trying to explain, to declare his position to Duryodhana. He did it many, many times, saying, Duryodhana, don't do this, because this is wrong. If you go against the dharma, in the Vedas it is written that someone who does not follow the rules of his caste, of his position, he will be burned, because the sins is like they are like fires, and it's just a question of time, and your life will be destroyed by sins. So Bhishma Deva was very careful about this, and I said to Duryodhana, don't do this, because you will be burned by your own sins. So Duryodhana understood that, but it is sometimes it is impossible to go against his own nature. Just like you remember the story of the scorpion and the crocodile, you know the story. This anecdote say that one day there was one scorpion who wanted to cross the river. So he asked the crocodile if he could climb on his back so that he could bring him on the other side of the river. And the crocodile said, no, I will not do that, because you will sting me and you will kill me. So the scorpion said, oh, no, I cannot do that, because if I sting you, then I also will die, because I will drown. And the crocodile was convinced by this theory, by this idea. So he said, okay, climb on my back. And in the middle of the river, what the scorpion did, he stung him. And the crocodile said, oh, what did you do? Why did you do that? You are also going to die now. And the scorpion replied, yes, I know, but this is my nature. Nature is so strong that you can do things which you know that they will harm you, that will even sometimes destroy you. But this is your nature, and it's very, very difficult to go against it. So Duryodhana knew very well that the sons of Pandu were virtuous, and they also were Krishna's friends, so they were materially and spiritually completely on the right path, and they were the right ones, and he was the wrong one, but there was nothing he could do. He was a demon. He was a demon in his past life. He came here, he had to destroy himself by his own sins. So we arrived at the Kurukshetra battle, and Bhishma Deva at a certain point lost desire for life, and he stopped fighting with the same verve that characterized his action during the other days. And then what happened is that it was very difficult to kill Bhishma Deva because he would counteract. At that point he was not attacking, but he was defending himself. So the Pandavas could not really hit him because he was defending himself. At that time, the Kshatriyas, they were so powerful that they would break the arrows with his own arrows. And they had, Bhishma Deva had hundreds of arrows coming toward him, and he was breaking all the arrows with his own arrows. That was how powerful Bhishma Deva was. So how to do? What to do? Bhishma wanted to die. He wanted to withdraw from the battle. But as a Kshatriya, he could not just, you know,
surrender.
Because Kshatriya never surrender. So he was praying within himself, please do the right thing. You know what to do. He was praying and in his body. And then Krishna, who knew Bhishma Deva's heart, said to the Pandava, take Shikhandin and put it in front. So who was Shikhandin? Bhattamai, who was Shikhandin?
Shikhandin, I don't know.
You remember the story that I told a few weeks ago about the Amba prince? Princess?
Ambalika.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well,
there were three sisters, Amba, yeah. Ambika, Ambalika. They were the daughters of the Kashi, the king of Kashi. So Vichitravidya wanted to marry, but he was very weak. At that time, a prince had to win a battle to get the princess. And there were these three very beautiful princes. And so Bhishma Deva went in representation of Vichitravirya. And he fought against everybody and he won the princesses. So he took the three princes, Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. But there was one particularity, that Amba was in love with a certain prince whose name was Shalva. So she was very much in love with this prince. But in the excitement of battle, although Amba was saying, I don't want to come, because princesses, they're not obliged to go. If they don't want to, they don't go. So Amba was saying, no, I don't want to go. But Bhishma could not hear because he was fighting against hundreds of other princes. So there was this particular prince whose name was Shalva again. So ran after, because he was also in love with Amba, and ran after Bhishma. But he was totally defeated by the most powerful warrior in the planet at that time. So Amba saw Shalva very badly defeated by Bhishma. Shalva could not do anything, he was totally defeated. So when the three princesses was in front of Vichitravirya, at the end Amba had the opportunity to speak, And she said, I don't want to marry you. I'm in love with Salva. I wish to go with him. And Vishitravira said, okay, you go. You don't want me. You're not obliged. And she went. But Salva could not accept Amba as wife, because at that time princes at a certain level would never accept a wife if the wife has seen him in bad predicaments, like utterly defeat. And Salva said, no, you are never going to respect me as much as a wife should, because you saw me defeated. So Amba said, okay, now what do I do? My life is ruined. Nobody will marry me because everyone knows that I'll be first abducted by Bhishma, then refused, then let go by Vishitravirya. And then now Salva refused me. Who is going to marry me? Nobody. At that time, no king would marry a princess who had so many strange relationships with other men, etc. So she went back to Vishitravirya and asked Vishitravirya to marry her and give her a family and give her a life. But Vishitravirya said, no, now I cannot marry you because I know that your heart doesn't belong to me. So poor Amba then said, who is responsible for my misery?
Bhishmadeva.
So she went to Bhishmadeva and said, now you marry me. And Bhishmadeva said, I cannot marry you. I cannot marry you because I am a brahmachari. I took a vow of life brahmachari. So Amba was distraught. She didn't know what to do. So at the end, she swore revenge against Bhishma, and she went to the forest. She met Parashuram. It's a long story. Then she did austerities, and she gave up her body. But she got the blessing in the next life to be born as the one who will cause Bhishma's death. And she, Amba, took birth as a daughter of as a female, as a daughter of Draupada, King Draupada. So Shikandin, then it was a long, again it's a long story. She went to the forest and she had a change of sex, but her body really didn't completely change. She became a man by the blessing of a yaksha, but her body looked very much like a female. It was like a very, very female man. So Bhishma knew all the story, and Bhishma has felt so bad for Amba because he unwillingly caused her misery, etc. And when Duryodhana asked him at the beginning of the war to be his generalissimo. Is that correct? In
general.
English? Generalissimo? The general?
General.
The general. He said, it's a condition. I will not kill the five Pandavas, and I will not fight against the Shikandin, because he was born as a woman. He said, because he was born a woman only, because he didn't want to reveal. He knew the previous life of Shikandin. So at that point, what Bhishma had to do, what the Pandavas had to do to kill Bhishma, is to put Shikandin in front so that he will not fight against Shikandin. Then the five Pandavas behind Shikandin, so that Bhishma would not kill the second line of warriors, and then all the other warriors behind. And then Shikandin was throwing arrows with all rage, because he remembered his past life. And these arrows would penetrate inside the body of Bhishma. And then from behind, Arjuna also was throwing arrows against Bhishma. And these arrows also pierced Bhishma's body. And Bhishma was saying to his chariot driver, look, this arrow is from Arjuna, this arrow is from Shikandin, and the chariot driver asked him, how can you tell? He said, because the ones who penetrate more, they are from Arjuna, because he's a warrior, a more powerful warrior, he's a born as a man. These others also penetrate into my body, but they are weaker. So at the end, when all his body was full of arrows by all kinds of warriors, not only Shikandin and Arjuna, then he fell down without touching the ground, because of the arrows were keeping up. And this description of Bhishmadeva leaving the body is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. You can see that Bhishma was a great yogi. And the great yogi lives in complete understanding and realization of what is the relationship with the body. That if you pierce this jacket, you don't feel anything. Of course, if you are very identified, you say, "Oh, my jacket!" You know, you feel angry because someone has damaged your jacket.
Or my glasses.
Yes. So what is the? But if someone is detached, they say, "Okay, it's broken. I'm going to buy another one." It's not so bad. But the people nowadays is so identified with the body that if something happened to the body, they actually feel pain. But this is only a mental projection. It's not real. For two reasons. First of all, because we are different from the body. And second, because the soul cannot suffer. So this is all a question of identifying with the body. And Bhishmadeva was completely detached from the body. He didn't have any relationship with the body, so he didn't feel any pain. But he was still acting, like you say here, Niritta, Niritta Sarvendriya, Vritti. Activities, the vrittis are the activities. Vritti is a very important word. If you are going to participate to my Yoga Sutra classes, then we are going to talk a lot about this word, vritti. So all the activities, he had still activities externally. He was looking, he was with the eyes, he was still feeling or drinking the water that Arjuna gave him and all these things, you know. Then at a certain point, he stopped all activity of the senses at his command. Can you imagine what the power of this personality that he could stop the activities of his senses? You try to stop the activities of your senses. We try. We don't make it. Try to stop your breathing. You can't. Try to stop your thinking. You can't. Try to stop your hearing. You can't. Because since a conditioned soul has not developed a spiritual body, he must act with a material body. Because he needs a body. The soul needs a body to let his natural qualities to flow. So if someone is not a spiritual body, is forced to act with this material body. Bhishmadeva at that point had his spiritual body completely developed. So he didn't need a material body. So he decided, now you stop. You stop looking, you stop thinking with this material body. And he just lived inside. He continued living inside. And what did he do? Well, he prayed. It's not pray in the Christian sense, in the Christian meaning. Something more, is something deeper. than just praying. The idea, for instance, the Christian idea of praying is that you ask something. You know? So, God, please give me this, or do this for me. This is the idea of praying, asking, give me. They even ask for the daily bread. They are not even able to cook their own bread. They had to ask. It's ridiculous. If you, I lived in a city where this is the heart of Christianity, Rome. And they distribute this. In Italy they are called santini. I don't know in English how you call them. They are small paper, very small. On one side there is the face or the picture of a saint, and on the back there are the prayer relating to the particular saint. Okay? Then, and there are many of these because there are many saints. And so every day I had a church, big church, just, you know, below my house. In Rome you had the one church every couple hundred meters. And every day they would distribute this saying. And you read them, give me. It was unbelievable. Their conception of praying. Bhishma Deva was not asking anything to Krishna, that in this verse is calling Janardana. He was calling Janardana the controller of all living beings. He was just glorifying, because it's beautiful when you love somebody, you want to glorify him. It is not when you appreciate somebody, you don't go to ask him. You tell, oh, this person is so beautiful. Oh, this person knows so much. Oh, this person is so kind. Oh, this person. And this is glorification. Bhishma Deva was glorifying Lord Krishna and remembering Lord Krishna. And we'll see in the next verses of this chapter, Bhishma Bhagavatam, how he was meditating on Krishna's qualities and activities. In particular, he loved the time when Krishna took a wheel in his hands and he rushed. You know the story? Well, there was a certain point, Bhishma Deva was just too much. He was killing everybody. You know? Everybody was just fleeing from him. And I think there was a 6 or 7 day of his 10 days of leadership of the Kurava army. He was... that day he was furious. So Krishna, surely you remember, that Krishna promised not to fight. Arjuna asked him to be his chariot driver, and he was, Krishna was not supposed to fight. But that day Bhishma was just too much, and he said, "Okay, since you, Arjuna, do not want to do the necessary to kill Bhishma Deva, then I'm going to do it." So why Arjuna did not want really to kill Bhishma? Why? Because of love. He loved him so much. Arjuna received so many nice things from Bhishma Deva. He was one of his gurus. He was one who taught him a lot of his martial arts. And Bhishma Deva has always been very kind to him in his youth. So Arjuna had not his heart into the fight with Bhishma Deva, not so much. And even when he saw that Bhishma Deva was melting his army, was literally disintegrating his army. So Krishna, at the end, he did not have any weapon with him. He just took the wheel of a broken chariot and he rushed against Bhishma Deva. And Bhishma Deva went in ecstasy. He went in ecstasy, seeing that form of Krishna, so beautiful. And Krishna was very tall and a very, very beautiful bodily form. And he was dressed as a prince. and he had his heirs who were completely disabled. How you say that? English-speaking people, help me.
Hair.
You lose when your
loose
hair is not tight. It's
loose
not
and hair.
Loose and hair. No. And he was sweating, and his eyes were red, just like when you get very angry. You know, then you're really your eyes become, you know, red. You know. And he had, but his lips was shivering by rage, but still they were pink. Sometimes when you get very, very angry, the lips become a little bluish, you know. But Krishna's lips were still very pinkish, because that is the color of Krishna's. And his hands were very soft, although he had so much power, you know, big, you know, those big chariots. They were drawn by sometimes two or four horses. So you don't put a small chariot from behind the four horses, you know, the big warrior chariots. So he lifted it with just one hand, and he rushed in the middle of clouds of dust in that with that mood. And Bhishma Deva just kneeled down, and he said, "Yes, this is what I want." This is because one of the rasa in the spiritual world is chivalry, and Bhishma Deva, that's his rasa with Krishna. Bhishma fights with Krishna even in the spiritual world, and so seeing Krishna in that mood, it was the perfection for Bhishma. And of course, Bhishma, you know the story then. That Krishna did not kill Arjuna. Actually happened twice, not only one. That name is called Ratangapani. That's one of the name for Krishna, and that's his specific name of Krishna wielding his Pani means hand. Ratanga means piece of a chariot. Rata, just like Rata Yatra. Rata, Ratangapani. So that's a little bit of the story, a little bit of philosophy also. If you have any question, I would like to answer. So kind to speak on the machine so that everybody on the internet.
I have actually three questions.
Three?
Wow. Oh, actually, some of them might be a comment, but a comment can become a question as well. We see, I'm going to start from the backwards. You just mentioned how Bhishma Dev, you know, had this chivalry rasa with Krishna, but still it was favorably performed. We have examples of the wrestlers in a wrestling arena of Kamsa, who also fought with Krishna, but it was unfavorably done. So sometimes external circumstances might kind of look very deceiving. You know, how one relates to Krishna. So I guess the question is, what determines, if not the external, if we cannot judge externally, is this person favorably serving Krishna or not? What determines that it's favorably done, I guess? What is the determined factor? That's one question.
Maybe we can...
One by one?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can sit close to you and don't disturb yourself. Okay? So, there is not possible to determine it because it's something very internal. Unless you don't have that level of vision by which you can see the consciousness of the person, you cannot see it. Just like yesterday I was reading an article written by
advanced Vaishnava, and I was asked about how do you determine the guru, who is your guru, how you find your guru. And then he correctly, in my humble opinion, answered in two ways. There are two things that you can see and one thing that you cannot see. He said one thing is knowledge. The guru has to have knowledge. If he doesn't know, how can he teach? And knowing does not mean we are not this body, and knowing means knowing the scriptures, all the scriptures. And the other one is detachment, that he has to be detached, that you can see it, if the person is detached or not. If you see that the guru smokes cigarettes, of course it's not detached. If you see the guru, that's not. But then there is other quality the guru must have, which is complete transcendental realization. So how do you determine that? You can't. You can't, because it's a stage of consciousness. We had acharyas who externally did many weird things. We had acharyas with very, very particular natures. And for instance, there was one Babaji in Navadvip, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati prohibited his disciple to go see him. And he was a very particular type of person. He would scream at everybody, he was long hair, he won't wash himself, very, very strange personality. So all the devotees were thinking, oh, Guru Maharaj is telling us not to go there because this person is not bona fide. So this idea came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Goswami Maharaj, and he said, no, you don't understand. If you go there, you just make offenses. He's so advanced that you cannot understand that he's advanced. Then you'll be only attracted, actually not attracted, but repulsed?
Repulsed.
By his external activities, because you don't have the internal vision. Then you tell, oh, this person is deviated, oh, this person. And you cannot see that. That's why Srila Prabhupada told us to be very sober in the way we act. And this sometimes seems that we are a little stiff. Is that correct, stiff? We always say the same mantras every day, and when we talk about Bhagavatam, we are quite
formal,
etc. So these formalities are very important, and all the etiquettes are extremely important for various reasons. First of all, etiquettes or formalities are not just formalities, are the form of the substance. There are formalities which is external, and then there is a substance which is internal. But if someone has an internal substance, he will act externally according to that substance he has, and then there is no difference between internal and external. But there is one very serious reason, is that we had to be sober in such a way we don't put in trouble people, so that people can judge our advancement or the way we are just by looking to our external. But even if we are very advanced and we would like to behave in a certain particular, we should not, because otherwise people will be repulsed or falsely attracted, like Prakita Sahaja, to our external. That's why our as preachers, our external should be very, very sober.
Paka.
And we should follow Paka. And we should follow the etiquettes, never just the name of a devotee. Never, ever. Always Advaita Acharya Prabhu and Guru Prasad Maharaj. And not just, I heard someone of you saying Gunagrai. When Gunagrai is coming. For me, that I am very conservative type of person, is like, what? I became almost you know, irritated. Gunagrai, who is your brother? Gunagrai. I know that sometimes you do this not because of a bad person, you know, but it just shows two possible things. One, there is a deviation, philosophical deviation, that someone is preaching, like, oh, this is not important, this is all formalities, you know. I respect Gunagrai Maharaj, I don't need to call him Maharaj, you know, because it's something internal, doesn't matter the external. This is a philosophical deviation. Prabhupada would sometimes call his own disciples Prabhu. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would definitely call his. Or there is a simple ignorance, untraining, that someone is not trained. So never error, but just by the name. You know, just Prabhu or Sannyasis Maharaj, like this. And then there are different types of devotees. We have to learn how to behave with different types of devotees. Not that there are two types of devotees, you know, like the gurus and everybody else. You know, this is a very current joke for our certain countries. We joke among ourselves, we say, yeah, for those devotees, they're so untrained, there are two types of devotees, the gurus and everybody else, you know. And so if some Prabhupada disciple comes and he's not an initiating guru, nobody really cares about him. And maybe the next day he becomes a guru, oh, Maharaj, you know. So one day before he was a nobody, and after he, just because. This is very immature. We have to learn all the etiquettes, and etiquettes are very important, because you will see how your character will build up on all this party, on knowledge, on studies, and observing etiquette, observing disciplines, especially for brahmacharis. Oh, brahmachari is the most beautiful ashram of all. You know, because even a sannyasi has to accept so much respect. And this for spiritual life, not only dangerous, but it's unsavory. Because if someone is really advanced, he feels uneasy in front of someone. Because by nature we are dasas. We want to serve everybody. We never feel that we should be served. But we like to serve. Just a pleasure to serve. But a sannyasi, or guru, or senior devotee, not only he should be respected, but he must be respected. But there is something more, that he must accept that respect. It's his duty, because if he doesn't, then the others will not practice devotion, will not practice discipline. Because this is how we learn to become Krishna's devotees, by being devotees of his devotees. So all these things are very important, and in brahmachari life there are no marriage, there are no children, there are nothing, you are just free. You can study and you can learn, and you go out in Sankhita. It's so beautiful, such a beautiful life. I mean, I've been a brahmachari for many years of my life. I don't say that I'm not happy, because if my wife otherwise would chastise me. She's a very saintly lady, and nothing to say this, but still, I have to say that my brahmachari years were extremely pleasant. And if someone can be a brahmachari the whole of his life, you don't lose anything. I can tell you. I don't know if any of you has been married before. I don't know. But if someone can stay a brahmachari the whole of his life, that's ideal. There's no doubt about that. So, to conclude and to finish your question, there is something that you can see, like a guru qualification, you must know, you must practice. But you don't know if he actually loves Krishna, or if he has a deeper understanding and realization. So there are something that cannot be seen, nor is necessary to be seen. So what is the reason to know if someone is no use?
Thank you. So we can't really, no. I guess it's between them and Krishna. Can we say it like that?
More or less. I would say something more about that.
Especially in the West, we are very much used to continuously conclude judgments. We look at person, this is good, this is bad, you know. For spiritual life, this judgmental mechanism, which is very fast, in 1 second, sometimes you conclude that the person is very good, or is very bad, or someone else is very bad. It's not necessary, and is detrimental to our spiritual life. We should stop this mechanism of immediate judging, especially if the judging is from the external. Oh, that devotee, I like him, you know, maybe because he's very tall. I remember one time there was one devotee who wanted to take initiation from a guru because he had the blue eyes. You know, and his eyes is, when he looks at me, it's like he's, you know, that is not proper. That is not proper. So judging sometimes is unnecessary, hasty, and we should just suspend it. You know, we should know when we need to judge and when we don't need to judge. When we don't need to judge, or the judgment is not necessary for our spiritual life, we should keep it floating.
Thank you. And the second question is in regards to Arjuna. You mentioned seems like there's two instances. In one instance, he's not shooting. He's suspending his arrows.
No what?
In one instance, he's not shooting his arrows towards Bhishma Dev. He doesn't want to fight Bhishma Dev. Although Krishna told him to do that, but he's refusing the instruction. And then in another instance, he's the one that at the very end, did shoot arrows and did actually pierce Bhishma Dev's body many, many times. Very strongly. So what happened? Why in one instance he couldn't and other actually he should?
No, in a specific situation which occurred many times actually during the Kurukshetra battle, not only once, but at particular time where Krishna took up the wheel of the chariot, which happened twice actually. So that particular situation was not that Arjuna was not shooting, but was not shooting with the due with the due determination. He was like tepid. No, it was like doing not with necessary
half-hearted.
Yes. So, and Krishna knew the difference when Arjuna was fighting with all his heart or not with his full heart. And Krishna became upset with Arjuna because Arjuna was not fighting with the due ardor. And then he chastised Arjuna. And then he wanted to kill. Then Arjuna went after Krishna, when Krishna had the wheel of the chariot and he was going towards Bhishma to kill him, and Arjuna just took him, you know, just hold him in his arms, say, no, don't worry, no, I will fight him. Go, come back. Don't break your vow. The vows are very important. So don't break your vow. And Krishna came back, and then Arjuna started to fight again. But in that day, he couldn't kill Bhishma Deva. It wasn't easy to kill Bhishma Deva. Also because the right time, Bhishma wanted to die in a precise time, in a certain time. in a yogic time, so that day was too far, and this is a long story.
And it's very interesting because, I mean, in our own lives also we go through a lot of similar situations when we fight wholeheartedly, and sometimes we don't fight wholeheartedly. It's a humanly thing to do, I guess. Having better days and worse days. But you know, luckily Krishna is there, so we can be encouraged and guided. My last question is, it's from the purport. Says here that I'm just paraphrasing now because I can't see. Oh, there it is. That spiritual soul is pure, and then the soul is originally pure, and so also the senses. The senses, it's referring to material senses, or could you elaborate on that?
We are used to hear sometimes explanations from probably less expert or whatever, that there are two types of senses, that there are the material senses and there are the spiritual senses, like if they were two separate things. Actually, it is not. Our senses are the spiritual senses contaminated. So we don't have, for instance, to destroy the mind. We have to purify it. Why? Because that is a spiritual mind contaminated. So all our senses are from spiritual origins. So the way it works is very simple. You know, you have a source of energy that irradiates energies, you know, like the sensorial activities, etc. But there is a filter all around, and these energies come in pure spiritual, come out contaminated. So we don't have to change our senses. We have to purify them. How? To by removing the filter. And this filter is Maya, which contaminates us by false identification. False identification is the idea that we are something different from what we are, spirit souls. So this is how it works. So our seeing power is not material, it's spiritual, but it's contaminated. The hearing power is also spiritual, but it's contaminated. If they were different, then what's the point of having a purification process?
Just destroy it.
Just destroy it. Yeah. Just like some Buddhist philosophers say, or some type of Mayavadi that are different. That's all illusion. Then you have to the process neti neti neti, that you say no, this is false, and then you destroy everything, and what remains? Nothing. That's the nirvana. Nir is a negation. It's nirvana or neti neti is the same thing. Nirvana means to negate, to deny existence to everything. So if we think that there is a difference between the senses we are using right now and our spiritual senses that we will use when we will be completely purified, then we are falling in the same mistake, understanding mistakes of Buddhists and Mayavadis. We don't have to destroy our mind. We don't have to destroy our intelligence or shut down all sensorial activities. No. we had, at the contrary, we had to utilize them more, but in Krishna's service, because that is purifying. So that's why this is what Srila Prabhupada is meaning here when he's referring to the senses being actually originally pure. That's it? Okay?
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.